Vaishnavadaya Krishna Vasaya Bhutade Sukhake Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacharesha Charane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Dvaita Gadadhara Sri Vasati Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Bring from 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam chapter 7 verse 4. Anvaya Gati Reke Na
Anvaya Gati Reke Na
Viveke Oshatapana
Viveke Oshatapana
Spargastana Samamnayai
Spargastana Samamnayai
Vibra Shadvi Asatvarak
Vibra Shadvi
himself and distinguish the soul from the body by analytical study. For example, when one considers his body, his head, his hands, and so on, one can certainly understand the difference between the spirit soul and the body. No one says, "I head." Everyone says, "My head." Thus, there are two entities, the head and I. They are not identical, although they appear to be one conglomeration. One may argue, when we analyze the body, we find a head, hands, legs, belly, blood, bones, urine, stool, and so on. But after everything is considered, where is the existence of the soul? A sober man, however, avails himself of this Vedic instruction. Yatova imani bhutani jayate yena jatani jivati yat prayanti abhi samvishanti tad vijyagyasasva tad rama iti taitraya upanishad. Thus, he can understand that the head, hands, and legs, and the entire body have grown on the basis of the soul. If the soul is within, the body, head, hands, and legs grow. Otherwise, they do not. A dead child does not grow up, for the soul is not present. If by a careful analysis of the body one still cannot find the existence of the soul, this is due to ignorance. How can a gross man fully engage in materialistic activities understand the soul, which is a small particle of spirit, 1/10,000 of the tip of the size of a hair? Such a person foolishly thinks that the material body has grown from the combination of chemicals, although he cannot find them. The Vedas informs, however, that chemical combination does not constitute the living force. The living force is the Atma and Parama, and the body grows on the basis of that living force. The fruit of a tree grows and undergoes six kinds of change because of the presence of the tree. If there is no tree, there could be no question of the growth and maturity of the fruit. Therefore, beyond the existence of the body are the Paramatma within the body. This is the first understanding of spiritual knowledge expected in Bhagavad Gita, Dehinosmin Yathadehe. The body exists because of the presence of the Supreme Lord and the Jiva, which is part of the Lord. This is further explained by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Tataminam Sarvam Jagaravyakta Murtina Matstani Sarva Bhutani Natchalanteshva Vastitaha. By me, my manifest form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. The Supreme Soul exists everywhere. The Vedas enjoin Sarva Kalvidam Brahma. Everything is Brahman, or an expansion from Brahman's energies. Sutre Maningana Iva, everything rests on the Lord, just like pearls strung together on a thread. The thread is the principle of Brahman. He is the chief cause, the Supreme Lord upon whom everything rests. Thus, we must study the Atma and Parama, individual soul and super soul, upon whom the entire material cosmic manifestation rests. This is explained by the vague statement, Yato va imani bhutani jayate yena jatani anjivanti. Translation: sober and expert person should search for the spirit soul with minds purified through analytical study in terms of the soul's connection with and disconnection from all things that undergo creation, maintenance, and destruction. So this is the instruction of Prahlad, which he obtained from Narada Muni. Now, Narada Muni's main purpose is to teach bhakti. But we see here that he begins, through the words of Prahlad, by talking Atma-gyan, rather than Bhagavad-gyan. the first thing he has to do is convince people, particularly the students, the asura's children, that you're not the material body. And this is the same strategy that Krishna takes in Bhagavad Gita, where he first begins talking to Arjuna and says, you're not the material body. So the goal of this is to make people understand that there's something beyond the material body. And the reason for this is that normally people do not think anything except material body. It never occurs to them as anything except material body, supporting the material body, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, job, work, family, etc. That's everyone in the world thinks like that. And nobody's going to think otherwise unless someone says, no, that's not right. This is the common perception. That's also admitted in the Vedas. Therefore, for most people, they're given easy process. Just do karma yoga. Don't think too much. Engage in your activity, support your family, artha, dharma, kama. You get your material needs satisfied by working very hard. Follow some regulated principles. That's artha, dharma, kama. So that is recognized, and therefore these elements are there in the Vedic process. We could ask, well, why do they involve themselves in artha, dharma, kama when they should just go for moksha and prema? But most people are not interested in such things. So therefore, they cater to the lower instincts of people and the lower gunas of people with artha, dharma, and kama. These are modes of tamoguna and rajaguna. Of course, the system, the Vedic system, is organized, even this system is organized in such a way that people should come to sattva-guna eventually, and then they are qualified for understanding about Atman like this. But generally, it is difficult for people to understand they're not the material body, they're the Atman, if they're in tamoguna or rajaguna. On their own, they will never think of such a thing. And even in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, do not disturb the minds of the ignorant people. Don't tell them, oh, give up all your work and this, understand your Atman, don't be attached to your material body. It'll simply disturb them. They'll stop the work and they won't do anything else. They won't even understand they're the, not the body. So don't disturb the unintelligent people. So that is one type of instruction given. People who are not qualified should not be encouraged to do something for which they're not qualified. So if you're qualified for karma yoga, don't do gyan yoga. That's essentially what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Don't teach the people to disturb their minds. So that is so in one sense. On the other hand, we see here, Narada Muni teaches Atma Gyan to Prahlad, and Prahlad teaches his students, you're not in a material body. So he said, well, why is he doing that? He's disturbing the minds of the ignorant people. However, there is another rule, and that is, one can teach bhakti everywhere. If this is simply isolated teaching of Atma Gyan, yes, these people, the asuras, are not qualified for that. Disengage them in karma yoga and whatever, and gradually elevate them that way. However, this Atma Gyan is connected with bhakti yoga. Yeah, we'll find later on that the next step is bhakti. So therefore, in that sense, it is not a problem in teaching this to people who are not qualified for jnana. The reason is that everybody is qualified for bhakti. If they have, we can give them a little faith, then they're qualified. It doesn't matter which guna they're in. So therefore, sudras, vaishyas, kshatriyas, brahmanas can take to bhakti, mlechas and chandalas can take to bhakti, people, anyone beyond the varnashram system can partake of bhakti. It's possible for everyone. So, though there is this prohibition, don't disturb the minds of the ignorant people, that is not a prohibition for bhakti. Everything else, yes, but not for bhakti. Why? Because everybody is qualified for bhakti. Furthermore, bhakti does not require that one renounce everything. So one can do all different activities in different varnas or beyond the varnas or whatever, and still do bhakti yoga. So it is no disturbance in any way. So anyway, here Prahlad is teaching about Atma, first of all. This is considered to be very important, and therefore there is a very prominent emphasis on this in many scriptures, including the Upanishads. And this idea of Adhyatma Gyan is very prominent. This is essential in the process of bhakti, that we're not the body, that we are the soul. But as I pointed out also, it is not enough simply to realize you're not the body, you are the soul. If it ends in that, then it becomes impersonal jnana. I am not the body, I am the soul. Final goal is to get moksha, liberation from the material body. But this does not include knowledge and service to the Supreme Lord. But therefore, it's incomplete. So, in the process of bhakti also, yes, we have to understand we're not the body, we're the soul, but we also have to understand that the soul is the servant of the Supreme Lord. Why we have to know that is because we cannot think in terms of the body. the body is the servant of the Lord.
Yes,
essentially. So, but body is material. It is akshit. It is subject to destruction. How can you get eternal happiness? You cannot have an eternal relationship with the Lord with a material body. It's impossible. And what kind of relationship you can have? Because it's not conscious. So, it is necessary to understand that within us is the soul. The soul is a conscious entity. That conscious entity is eternal. And it has an eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. This way, we can aspire for eternal happiness. If we're thinking only in terms of material body, no eternal happiness. So therefore, there's no particular goal. The human being strives, what his purusha artha is, artha, dharma, kama, moksha, all of that behind that is happiness. Atma wants to be happy. Person wants to be happy. Why do we strive to get money? To be happy. Why do we strive for different types of enjoyment? To be happy. Why do we try for moksha? To be happy. All these things are basically for being happy. Because it is the propensity of the jiva, the atma, to be happy. So naturally, in the material world, we're always striving for that happiness. The unfortunate thing is that, in the material world, this never takes place. Because happiness means eternal happiness. If you get happiness for 2 minutes and then you're not happy the rest of the time, what kind of goal is that? So when we say happiness, the whole goal of the jiva is happiness. It means eternal happiness, permanent happiness. So in the material world, definitely there is no permanent happiness. Secondly, the happiness that we get does not become happiness after a while. Whatever we get to make us happy eventually doesn't make us happy anymore. So for instance, some people like to eat. Everyone likes to eat. Yeah. But you cannot eat forever. If you get to eat forever, you get sick and die. Huh? Yeah? You have to stop. And then you get tired of it. If you like sweets, you eat sweets, you eat for 1 hour, then you cannot eat sweets anymore. Huh? Where does the happiness go after you've satisfied yourself for an hour of that happiness? It doesn't. All happiness, material happiness, is like that. Because God has limit. And then you no longer like that thing and you want something else. So, this is the second problem. It's not really satisfying. First is it's not eternal. Second, it's not really satisfying. But, why does the jiva keep doing this? Because it's his nature to be happy. It wants to be happy. So it keeps striving. So, that is the real goal. Artha, dharma, kama, moksha are all meant for that. Eventually, the happiness. Artha, dharma, kama, basically, is, we can say, short-term satisfaction, material satisfaction only, with the understanding eventually you should give it up and go for eternal happiness like moksha. We have the desire for happiness there in the jiva, in the atma, but it is never satisfied. If we simply separate the jiva from the material body, there is a happiness there also. It is the absence of distress. It is the absence of temporary nature. So you're satisfied because you're eternal, and you don't have old age, death, disease, etc., problems of the material world. So that is the happiness of moksha. But that actually is also not satisfying for the jiva, really. That is simply a negation of suffering and non-eternality. But that actually isn't real happiness. So real happiness for the jiva is in a relationship with the Supreme Lord. That brings about real happiness. Why it brings about happiness? Because the Supreme Lord is the origin of bliss. And by connection with the jiva gets bliss. they are very similar in nature. They are both conscious entities. The Supreme Lord is full of bliss. The jiva has a capacity for bliss. So when they come together, then the jiva can become blissful. The only question is, what type of relationship must be established? Actually, in the material world, even if we don't think of the Supreme Lord, even if we're a big demon and we hate the Lord, still, there's a relationship with the Supreme Lord. Everybody is automatically the servant of the Supreme Lord. So, what is the nature of the relationship between the jiva and the Supreme Lord, which will produce the bliss? Because obviously the demon in the material world isn't getting any bliss. It's opposite. You get suffering. So what is it that, what is that relationship between the jiva and the Supreme Lord which is so significant? Already related with the Lord by nature. We are dependent on the Lord by nature. That the Lord gives consciousness, the Lord gives us the ability to act and to know and do everything. So there is a relationship already. So that relationship becomes blissful when the jiva, by his free will, voluntarily recognizes the Supreme Lord and establishes a positive relationship with him. Positive meaning a relationship of affection. That is called bhakti. So when the jiva establishes a positive relationship of affection with the Lord, this allows for the ananda to take place. So in other words, through the process of bhakti yoga, the sadhana bhakti yoga, we begin, we cultivate that relationship. The beginning of bhakti yoga is the jiva accepts. Yes, I accept my relationship with the Supreme Lord. And then, sadhana bhakti is the process of solidifying, strengthening, purifying that relationship, perfecting that relationship. When it is perfect, it is called prema. And it is in prema that the bliss or the ananda manifests. So, all we have to do is recognize and accept the supreme existence of the Supreme Lord and then establish our affectionate relationship with him. So, the process of bhakti means we engage the senses and the mind and the intelligence in somehow solidifying that relationship. How do we do that? We engage them in service. And that service, according to our definition of pure bhakti, is anya-abhilashita shunya, without any desire except the desire to please the Lord. By nature, the jiva is conscious. By nature, the jiva wants to do something, act. By nature, the jiva wants to have an experience of bliss. Propensity for ananda is there. He wants to do things. He wants to know things. He's conscious. So, the jiva establishes a relationship with the Supreme Lord, and in that relationship he must have desire. We have an activity. Each activity has a motive behind it. If we don't have a goal behind it, we don't do the activity. Why do you study? To get knowledge, maybe, or to get a degree, or to make some money or something like that. There's some goal, far off goal, why you study for 10 years, 20 years, like that, even though you don't like it. Why do you do it? Ultimately, the reward is I'll get some money, I'll get a job and get some money. Why do I work? Not because I like working, because I get some money. So we've got a goal behind everything. And if you don't get the money, you wouldn't work. If you didn't get a job, You would go to college, yeah? If you're guaranteed at the end of college, no jobs available, why spend all the money and time and effort so many years studying? No, why? Well, there's something else. We'll play cricket or something. So, behind every action is a goal. Yeah? So, the goal is there also with even the pure jiva. Why we do anything? Desire must be there. We have a desire for something. But all desires connected with our enjoyment lead us into ignorance. That's why we're in the material world. So what kind of desire are we going to have which is different? The only desire which will not lead us into ignorance is a desire to please the Supreme Lord. If we desire something for ourselves, then we're back into ignorance and material coverings and all this karma. If our desire is not for ourselves, not for our enjoyment, for the Lord's enjoyment, then it is completely opposite. It destroys all the karma. It destroys all ignorance. And it establishes a relationship with the Lord. How does that work? When we act in that way, the Lord becomes very pleased and very blissful. And he becomes very attracted to the jiva. How is that? The Supreme Lord sees, this particular person is not interested in himself. He's interested in me. So I will be interested in him. In the material world, the Supreme Lord is looking at all the jivas as paramatma. He looks at everyone and sees them. And they say, they're all enjoying in the material world. Let them enjoy it. I'll supply everything to them. Fine. He takes care of them. So the Upanishads say the Supreme Lord is like one bird in the tree, jiva is like the other bird. The other bird is enjoying the fruit of the tree, not looking at the Supreme Lord. Eat all the fruit. And the other bird is looking at him, that's all. And he allows him to eat the fruit. He supplies the fruit to him. This means that in the material world, Paramatma witnesses all the activities that the jiva sees he wants to enjoy for himself in the material world. He lets him do that. However, when that bird recognizes the other bird, the Supreme Lord, Paramatma, then he gives up eating the fruit of the tree. He has no longer any enjoyment for that. And immediately, the other bird begins responding to him directly. So, Bhagavatam says that, Supreme Lord, Bhagavad Gita also, the Supreme Lord says, I am Sama, I am neutral. Everyone. Of course, he's compassionate to everyone, but also neutral at the same time. But I am attracted to my devotees. Why? Because my devotees are attracted to me. A devotee means one who is acting not for his purpose, but for the Lord. Therefore, the Lord also responds to him equally. So it is a reciprocal relationship between the Supreme Lord and the jiva. Jiva acts for the Lord acts for the jiva. This is the outstanding nature of bhakti. It does not take place with other processes, karma yoga, jnana yoga, or astanga yoga. The Lord is neutral. He supplies those processes for some people, but he doesn't involve himself directly. But he directly involves himself with the devotee. And therefore he says, I give you the intelligence by which you can come to me. Very quickly, I will deliver you from this ocean of birth and death, samsara. Krishna does not make this promise to the jnani and the yogi and the karmi, but he makes it to the devotee. So, there must be a desire in the jiva. The desire must be for the Supreme Lord and not for himself. That is why it is anyamadashashana, without any other desire, only desire to serve the Lord. So that this way, the jiva can operate with activity, with desire, etc. But it does not accrue karma, ignorance, etc. It does the opposite, it destroys all that. And what it does is it increases and increases his propensity to serve the Lord until it is 100% surrendered to the Lord. So this is the process to be followed, and the analysis of the Atma separate from the body is a preliminary for that. We cannot perform bhakti unless we understand that we are eternal and our goal is something eternal and blissful. So it is established on the basis of the nature of the jiva. So, unfortunately, in the material world, everyone is thinking in terms of I am the body, and these are things related to me, me and mine, etc. And very difficult for people to come out of that illusion. So, scripture and great devotees like Prahlad here teach this, that actually, no, you're not the material body at all. You are a spirit soul separate from that. And based on this, then we can perceive two higher things. That is, knowledge of the Supreme Lord and our relationship with Him and how to engage in activities to establish and perfect that relationship to Bhakti Yoga.
What did you say? That Lord, all living things are in Him. But He's not in Him. How to understand this?
Yeah.
That means He's not in Him. Someone...
He is simultaneously everything and not in everything. We say achintya bheda bheda. The Lord is simultaneously different from everything, separate from everything, and abheda, one with everything. So, how is He different? Obviously, He is not affected by material nature, He's not involved with material nature at all, He's not even involved with material jivas in the material world, even though He's looking at them. He's completely indifferent in one sense, neutral. In that sense, He's not there. And simultaneously, He's in the spiritual world. Up there. At the same time, He is everything in the sense that Achit Shakti and Jiva Shakti are Shaktis. And the Shakti and the Shaktiman, possessor of the Shakti, are considered non-different. So they're one. So therefore, matter and jiva are also one with the Supreme Lord as His Shaktis, because the Shakti and the Supreme Lord are intimately related together. Yeah? In that sense, one also. And in another sense, one, everything is arises from the Supreme Lord, in the sense everything is dependent on the Supreme Lord. So potentially, everything is in the Lord. That is matter and jiva, etc. Because He's the cause of everything. However, we also accept that eternally, jiva and prakriti are separate from the Supreme Lord. That's the beta part. But because the potency is already existing in the Lord, we can say they're one with the Lord. Because He has the potency and they are dependent on Him. So we say they're one with the Supreme Lord. So therefore, everything is one with the Lord, simultaneously different from Him.
He is not involved in someone's life. Just he keeps himself aloof.
Normally he does. Normally, no, he's not involved. Everyone just does it. Because they're not interested in the Lord also, he's not interested in that.
In this regard, maybe he's saying that I'm not in them.
Huh?
In this regard, he must be saying like...
Yeah, he's indifferent. He's Paramatma and everybody, but he's indifferent, like the bird in the tree. And the bird is looking at the other bird eating, it doesn't mind, let the bird eat, that's all. Simultaneously, he's not in them because he's in the spiritual world, enjoying his pastimes there.
What is the easiest process to get the attraction of the Lord? What is the easiest process to attract the Lord and so that He can involve in my life too?
What? Offer a leaf of food and flower with devotion, that will attract the Lord. Very easy process. Chant the name of the Lord. Who? The hunter, Magari the hunter. That was mercy of the Lord. It's a Kripa Siddhi. Mercy of great devotees, mercy of the Supreme Lord will allow a person to advance very quickly to a high stage without the sadhana. The kripa is a special case. Normal case is sadhana, and that requires knowledge. Well, if they don't accept, this is an example of a person who is rather indifferent to such things. In one sense, we don't preach to the faithless or don't preach to the demons, etc. So the only strategy we can have for such persons is don't preach, but expose them to bhakti in some way or other. Give them prasadam, give them a picture of Krishna, let them hear a kirtan. That's all. Take them to the temple once in a while, and that's it. That's all you can do. Until they get some inclination. Then later, when they get some little bit of favorability, then they can hear. So usually, logical arguments will not work for such a person. One who has faith, but is a little ignorant, doesn't know anything, then you give a logical argument, they readily say, oh yes, okay, we accept the existence of Atma. Some people are not in that category, so then what's the use? If you give many arguments, they'll counter that with some scientific argument, and then you'll end up with wasting your time, so better not to preach to such people.
Lord said that you should not preach to the faithless. Prahlad is actually doing the same thing here. He's preaching to the demons who doesn't have faith. We are also in the same situation here in this material world for the time being.
We have to judge very carefully. We can test the person to some degree and see his reactions or whatever. Based on that, we can either be silent or ignore him or encourage him or whatever, depending on his reaction. That's all. Yeah. So the preaching will be different for different types of people. Once we can broadcast the name everywhere, let everybody hear. Those that we speak to people, we speak to them and preach a little bit. Some of them will understand or are interested, some are not interested. So we take the interested ones first, and we try to encourage them more than others. Others, we can try. If they don't, then we forget about them and just let them hear kirtan, that's all. So the type of preaching will differ with different types of people, that's all. But broadcasting the name, that can be done everywhere.
Tarantaras Shishu Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jai.
Srila Swami Maharaj ki
jai.
Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai